Good afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I am a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And for the month of July, I am also a listener and a student. I'm glad you're tuning in this week, and I'm glad you've been hanging out with us all this month because it's been a really interesting kind of social education that I'm receiving, and I'm hoping you're getting the same experience as well. As the country continues to erupt in protests and pandemic and fear and anger, I chose at the beginning of the month to dedicate July to stepping aside and giving the microphone and my platform over to help amplify voices that really need to be heard as we all collectively grapple with the changing social and personal landscapes. I know that I am privileged to have this opportunity to speak with you every week and to access this position. And I think it's important that I move aside and make space because if we only hear the voices that continue to populate our social media or our news outlets or our go-to comfort for gathering information, then we're going to find ourselves continuing to be divisive in our understanding of what's happening in the world around us. So, as with every social and cultural revolution, the movements that we're seeing today are really being fueled by young people. There are people of all ages participating in the protests. There are people of all ages and backgrounds and interests that are going to the streets, that are speaking out. But really, at the end of the day, this revolution, as we see it, is mainly being fueled by young people, those millennials at the tail end of their generation and the emerging Generation Z. That's who we're really seeing the change in the vocabulary and the energy coming from. It's their optimism and spirit and enthusiasm and collective vision regarding social and systemic and institutional changes that need to be made that are pushing back against old paradigms. Because even in our best intentions, many of us, myself included, are still so kind of caught in the traditional paradigms, the stories of what is, that even in our attempts to wanting to move things forward, there are systemic and institutional issues that we don't recognize that need to be addressed to help move our cultural well-being forward. And I understand that it would be easy to get cynical and maybe a bit tempting to dismiss the passion and anger and resolve that we're seeing in the Gen Z and later millennials as just youthful folly or naivete. We've seen that before. We've seen, you know, young people take to the streets. But that would be really short-sighted to kind of brush aside what is happening today. Because what we're seeing in this generation of activists, which is in many ways different than any generation of activists before, is that this group of young people are the most highly educated, diverse, compassionate, well-traveled, open-minded, and group-oriented than any other generation in history. These are the children that we raised to take on the challenges of the world. This is a privileged group of young people who have had opportunities that no other generation has had before. They are the embodiment of the American dream. And they're coming of age right now, having absorbed the history, the values, and the promises that this country was founded on. And now they're using all the lessons that they learned in their AP classes and college education and high-level high school classes. They're using these lessons to demand and to shape what we see as the United States and the promises that were made in the Constitution. This generation actually wants to create a society that reflects those promises and holds us accountable to providing opportunities for all. You know, what we're experiencing is this sense of dissonance when two things don't quite align, where we have ideals, where we have a written paper, an ideal that we have all believed in since the founding of this country. But when it's not being made available to a large part of the population, then these two things do not come together and we create this sense of dissonance. And that's what we're seeing today, is this anxiety, this inequity being brought to the surface. And we have to recognize that we either are going to bring our ideals and our expectations and our actual society into an equitable experience, or we're going to continue having these eruptions of dissonance and anxiety and protest coming and going and coming and going. And the other thing that's important is that what we're seeing from this younger generation, those who are fueling these movements, is that their American dream is not the American dream that we grew up with. That is not the American dream that's reflected in our current capitalistic, corporate-run, mainly white-focused American dream. Their American dream is grounded in the values and principles and desires that actually are more reflective of ancient and indigenous and collectivistic cultures that operate for the common good and the whole and not just for the individual, which is where we've been. So, for this month, it is BIPOC, Mental Health Awareness Month. I am passing the mic over to my guest hosts, David Gudiel and Aliyah Sade. They are former students of mine. They are college graduates, and they are sharing their perspectives and interests and energies and personal experience to help maybe broaden our experiences and understanding of where that new American dream is taking us. So, David and Aliyah, welcome back. Week four?
I think so, yeah.
All right, so go ahead and introduce yourselves once again.
Thank y'all so much for tuning in again, and thank you, Elizabeth, for that great introduction. My name is Aliyah Sade. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a yogini, birth worker, activist. I identify as queer, and I recently graduated from University of California, Los Angeles, in World Arts and Cultures and Global Health.
And then my name is David Gudiel. I use he, him, his pronouns. I'm queer, Mexican, and Guatemalan. I recently graduated from Cal Poly in degrees in psychology and ethnic studies. I'm a yoga lover, and I'm an artist and joy bringer.
All right. And so where are you going to take us this week?
So first, we would love to follow up on our conversation from last week and talk about our recent engagement, marriage, and what it all means in the context of this changing world where we're trying to dismantle a lot of the isms in our society. And then we want to switch gears and talk about decolonizing our wellness and reclaiming our bodies, which we feel are pertinent parts of cultivating joy in our relationship as displaced and colonized BIPOC young folks. So we're hoping y'all will join us for that journey.
And I'm sure we'll be doing some defining of terms also along the way to make sure everybody gets that same understanding that you have. And this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist with guest hosts David and Aliyah. We won't be opening up the phone lines, but if you did have a thought or a question you wanted to share, you can call us at 805-549-8855, and your question or comment can be passed along. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. If you missed any of our special shows this month, you can podcast our shows wherever you get podcasts. Just look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, share it with friends. Let's broaden our conversation to get more people in and discussing what's changing and happening in the world. And as always, we appreciate being part of this conversation. We're going to take a quick break and come back and pass it over to our guests. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Just at KCBX.
Hello, you're listening to a conversation with a reluctant therapist takeover. I'm David Goudier, and today we are talking about finishing up conversation from last week about marriage and engagement during a time period like this, and also reclamation of our bodies and health as colonized, displaced BIPOC, which stands for Black Indigenous People of Color.
So first, I would love, and this is Aliyah Shade speaking, I would love to kind of unpack these terms displaced and colonized. As Black and brown young folks, we don't have access to our ancestral lands. For me, that looks like Africa and a lot of the Western countries there. And for David, that looks like Central America and Mexico. And we've also been robbed of a lot of our traditions and knowledge and ways of being. But I think that what we've been trying to cultivate in our relationship, we're recently engaged, is that sense of ritual and connection and group thinking, collectivism, like being with our family and communities. And I wanted to kind of touch on this idea of why would we get engaged in the middle of a pandemic? And I'd love to just share my story. I was van dwelling at my school because it is super expensive to live in Los Angeles. And I was in my last year of UCLA and living in my van when the pandemic hit and all of the gyms closed. I had nowhere to shower. All of the grocery stores were empty. I had nowhere to get food from. And my school closed down. So once my school closed down, there was absolutely no reason for me to be in Los Angeles. It was raining. It felt like the apocalypse. And David, who I'd been in a long distance relationship with for the past 2.5 years at that point, was saying, come to San Luis Obispo. So I came to San Luis Obispo, and then we were together 24/7. And it kind of became a conversation of, if not now, then when? Everything was falling apart anyway in the world. And we knew that we've always loved each other and we'll always love each other. And we knew that we wanted to get engaged and living together in the context of the world ending and a social revolution starting just showed us how deep that love goes and how expansive it is. It's not just David and I. It felt like our love is what is going to transform society, like loving in such a free way and loving in such an open way. And yeah, that was really the thing that made us want to get engaged, or like took away all of those fears that we have around engagement, especially our generation. I feel like we're very afraid of commitment. And I think that living together in that context just showed us that, oh wow, we can do this. Not only can we do this, but we can also like share our love with our community and our families and like heal our, all of these traumas that we have through this love. And we know that we're going to have a long engagement process due to COVID. I know that we're seeing our economy open back up. We're seeing our world open back up and people gathering in ways, but we can't forget that Black and brown people are dying at disproportionate rates and our family is a part of that demographic. So when we think about this engagement process that we're in, we know it's going to be a long engagement process and we know that's not a traditional thing to do. Usually it's like, you get your ring, you wait 3 weeks, and then you book the venue, and next year you have the wedding. But I know that for us, we're just graduating college, and we are reintegrating ourselves into our community during a pandemic where we can't actually be in community, and also during a revolution where we're being called to show up for our community. So there's this paradox happening, and we're trying to find our role as an engaged couple in our families and in our community. And then we're also trying to find our role in the revolution. And we really want to be intentional about that and make sure that our union is reconnecting our family and communities with nature, ritual, and play. And we'll figure out ways to cultivate that. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that we did that was seen as very unorthodox, we recently got tattoos. And you know, usually people don't go get tattoos like a week after getting engaged, but we went and did stick and poke tattoos, which is where you get a needle and you dip it in India ink, and then you just poke one dot at a time to create the shape. And David drew my tattoo, which was a sun on my ankle. And then I drew his tattoo, which was a moon on his ankle. And then our friend turned it into like a permanent image on our bodies. And we did it in such a beautiful, ceremonious way with like music and
chanting
and just in community. And it gave our friends a chance to really feel like they were also part of our engagement. And that experience completely changed our idea of, okay, we want to get married, because we were thinking we're going to go get a flight to Hawaii and get hitched.
Just us.
And then we realized that, no, that's rooted in this capitalism and this individualistic society that says you have to have this picturesque wedding, and it's about you and your fiance only. It's not about anyone else in the world. But we think that, as you know, I'm a Black woman, like, it's so important that my family is included in this process, because no one in my direct maternal lineage has gotten married in the past four generations. So I will be creating what marriage looks like in my family and representing that to my 10 younger siblings as well. So I know I can't just get on a plane and post it on Instagram that we're in Hawaii and we're married now, because that will set an example, not only for my family and community, that, you know, our love is just something to be put in a picture, and it won't make it tangible or intimate in the way that I feel like our society needs to be. I think that's what we're missing. We're missing that love. We're missing that connection. Would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I think when I'm thinking of like the whole marriage and the way we were choosing to get married, I think about it like partnership. You know, last conversation we talked about pair bonding and what kind of helps people basically walk through their life. And what I think about is, you know, everyone has an individual human experience. And that's the point. You know, we are all the main characters of our own story. And I got this from your lessons, professor, about the hero's journey. So I really take this to heart in my hero's journey of, you know, when I face these challenges of growth, of, you know, confusion, of being scared, who do I want to be next to me at the end of the world? And that's kind of what I really think about my loved ones. I think about my partner, but I also think about my family. And I think it'd be selfish to say that I'm only just loving Aaliyah, because I'm not just loving her. I'm loving her family. I'm loving her sisters. I'm learning to love all of them in different ways. And she is to mine as well. And, you know, the more love there is, there's just more fruition of different experiences that we all come together for. And our relationship looks like two, but other relationships can look more than two, but that's the way we chose to have our relationship. And it's funny because I've been a WOW leader at Cal Poly, and, you know, when I kind of chose to propose, I was telling her, you're my co for life. Like, we're each other's co's for life. And it feels like sometimes we're planning a week of welcome with all these dates and stuff, and it seems really fun. And sometimes, I'll be honest, it feels like a classroom project where you're stuck with someone that you didn't expect, and you're kind of, one's pulling one way and one's pulling the other, but at the end of the day, you have to communicate. And I think that's what I've been learning a lot, because through these isms and stuff, it gets difficult, but I think, you know, learning to be loved is what also helps you make the communication happen. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist Takeover. I'm David Gudiel, and today we're talking about decolonizing wellness, and we were just touching up on our relationship of why we as Gen Z chose to get engaged in the middle of a pandemic. And this is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. But yeah, that's what I would add to why we kind of chose to get married during the time period like this.
And I love what David was saying about, you know, in choosing to love me, he's not only loving me, he's also loving my family and my sisters. And I think, like, another thing I would add to that is my community. And I'm just thinking about this current social revolution that we're in, and how willing, during the protest, David was to put his body on the line to protect me, because we know Black women are the most unprotected people in the world. And I really saw this embodied and deep love, not only for me, but for all Black people during this recent uprising. And I just want to send some love to the protesters in Portland right now. If anyone is hearing about what's going on there, there are secret police abducting people, protesters off of the street. And when we're thinking about that, like, what do these protesters look like? They're Black and brown folks like David and I. And I just really want to just brush on that a little bit as, you know, we're talking about love and centering joy, because we know walking down the street that we can be snatched up at any second. And we know, like, each time we leave the house, we drive in our car, just getting pulled over by a police officer, that could be our last time talking to anyone that we love. And it really hit me, just living in San Diego again, we have a huge police presence compared to San Luis Obispo. And when I'm talking about finding our way back in our community, finding our roles again, when we were in San Luis Obispo, I used to drive David's car all the time. And he would be in the passenger side. And now he has me in the passenger side often. And yesterday we were kind of unpacking that. And I was saying, well, yeah, it's kind of the patriarchy that tells you that the man's supposed to drive and all these things. And he was telling me, well, no, I'm just thinking about what would happen if we got pulled over. And how would I feel if you were the person in that driver's seat and I wasn't taking that risk just for, like, the small convenience of it? So when I'm thinking about that, I think, like, just getting married during this time, being engaged, we're learning so much about how we navigate ourselves in this world and how we create. You know, I feel very safe with him, even though I might not feel safe in society. I feel very safe with him and how we're creating that safety for each other and for our communities. And I think that would be a good segue to talk about decolonizing our bodies and reclaiming our wellness. Do you think so?
I just wanted to jump in one thing, because as I'm hearing you talk, I can't help but feeling this sense of the power of the two of you together as opposed as individuals, that you make a bigger force when you join together in the world than as if you're trying to navigate alone. And I think that's one of the things we had talked about earlier, and I've talked about on the show, that your generation is really anxious about commitment and settling with one person. And yet that kind of sets up a lifetime of a lot of isolation and alienation and disconnect. And in some ways, either consciously or unconsciously, but I assume it's intentional, you've joined your lives together, because in this way, now you are a larger force in the community than you would be if you were alone.
Wow, that was a beautiful way to put that. And when I think about decolonizing our wellness, I feel like a big reason that BIPOC folks are facing such a complicated mental health crisis is because we've been disconnected from our community. We've been disconnected from our bodies, from ourselves, and filled with this idea of it's me against the world, because that's really what it feels like. And I love what you just said about, like, together we're stronger, we're more powerful. I definitely feel that. And I definitely feel that when folks from our generation, like, come together and when we're talking.
Because I think one of the ways that I'm looking at it is, like I was saying, you know, as we go through our own journeys, we're all facing these isms of life. And, you know, getting this partnership started and stuff really does feel like you were saying, like doubling of force, you know, feels, I guess, we're covering each other's backs because we each have our own strengths and weaknesses in different areas that we learn to share. And I get to learn more about anti-Blackness through her, because she will tell me these things that I don't think twice about. And I think it's a storyline and it's a journey of wellness together, walking me through this one path, saying, like, you got the left side, I got the right side, you got the front, I got the back, and it kind of is coming us together, things like that.
Yeah, I would definitely just want to echo that idea of cultivating wellness through relationships, through decolonial relationships, decolonizing our wellness through undoing that trauma and that fear that we feel in this world, this fear of commitment, this fear of connection. I think by choosing to be in an intimate relationship, a deeply intimate relationship, that's not just our relationship, but also our families and communities' relationship, requires us to address the byproducts and symptoms of colonization that exist within us that are harming us. And, you know, it on a romantic level, we learn so much from each other, but I also think in a very embodied way, we are learning to decolonize our diets, our fitness, the way we communicate. It's way less violent. And when I'm saying decolonizing, I really mean to undo that process of colonization, or the taking that happened a lot throughout history, the taking of our language. We can't even refer to ourselves in our indigenous tongues. I don't know any African dialects, and I'm 75% African, according to 23andMe. And David doesn't know any indigenous Native American languages. So we don't have the language to even talk about our experiences, although we have this blood and these histories and stories in us that we know, but we can't decipher, if that makes sense, because of the process of colonialism and the extraction of our resources and our generational wealth that's happened. And do you want to add anything else to just thinking about, like, what is decolonizing? It's like that reclaiming.
Yeah, I would say the decolonizing is, you know, centering indigenous voices, centering the way before a time of colonization, and how do we get back to that? So right. A big process of it entails a lot of unlearning and a lot of critical analysis of the world we see today, and questioning how we got to where we are, who gave us these words, who gave us these thought processes to regurgitate and mimic and pass on to each generation. It's about saying, stop, you know, who is this affecting, who benefits from this? And I think a lot of the times when we say, it sounds like surprising, or to some people, to hear like reclaiming indigenous practices, because the thought of indigenous people does not cross the minds of a lot. And that's because colonization is so deep in our country or in our communities and society that we don't think of that. We think that's in the past. We think that's far gone. But the truth is that there are indigenous people that are here today and around the world in different communities, and the kind of recentering their voices and getting to that.
And I think also trying to not only center their voices, but reconnect to who we were before colonization, before racism. Because, you know, my history as a Black woman doesn't start with slavery. There's millennia of stories and talents and skills that I can awaken in different ways. And I feel like Loving David has been one of the biggest decolonial processes, where I've been able to remember that joy and hope that my ancestors held.
Yeah, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm David Gudiel.
And I'm Alia Shade.
And we're taking over the mic for the Reluctant Therapist during BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month. Although we aren't taking live calls, you can share your comments or ask a question by calling 805-549-8855. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to continue the conversation.
I'd say there's potential.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop coming. Fed to the rules and I hit the ground running. Didn't make sense not to live for fun. Your brain gets smart, but your head gets dumb. So much to do, so much to see. So what's wrong with taking the back streets? You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now. And they say it gets colder. You're bundled up now, wait till you get older. But the media men beg to differ, judging by the hole in the satellite picture. The ice we skate is getting pretty thin. The water's getting warm, so you might as well swim. My world's on fire, how about yours? That's the way I like it, and I'll never get bored. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on.
Let's go.
Hello, welcome back. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We're David
and Aliyah,
sitting for the reluctant therapist, Elizabeth Barrett. Today we are exploring
decolonizing our wellness, reclaiming our bodies, and cultivating joy in our relationship. Before we went on our break, we were just talking about what does it mean to decolonize and what does that mean for our wellness, for our love, and for our communities. And I think we just really want to go back to this idea of it's a lot of unlearning. And I have observed, especially in my own community as a Black person, just a lot of hurts, young people being diagnosed as if they have a pathology or disease, just trying to cope with the societal trauma of racism, the societal trauma of, for a lot of us, being poor, and the societal trauma of having so much taken away from us through the process of forced assimilation. And I think what that looks like, how that shows up in our lives, in our relationship, a lot of the time is these roles that we think we need to take on for each other. The roles that we had in the beginning of our relationship, for instance, there was a lot of me thinking that it was my duty almost to heal David because he's like a man. And like, that's what we're told in the movies, right? You're supposed to be like this super like grounded woman. And like you are responsible for the healing of everyone around you, like as a Black woman. And I think one big thing has been learning that, you know, sometimes you're, if you are a healer, and I do identify as a healer sometimes, sometimes our superpowers are meant for ourselves sometimes. And we're meant to like go through that journey of healing ourselves. And when we are able to model that and be like that lighthouse for our loved ones, for our lover, then, you know, we're inviting everyone else into that healing. And I think like decolonizing my wellness, it meant, you know, I went to a therapist all 5 years of college, and she was this wonderful woman. And, you know, she was a white woman, and she had went to UCLA as well as when she was a student, but her experience and my experience at UCLA were completely different. And I think something that I began to learn about 2 years into therapy, and I never had access to therapy the way that I did in college any other time in my life. Therefore, in college, I had all these diagnoses, but for the rest of my life, I didn't. I was just like, you know, a normal like Black kid coping with reality. And my teachers knew what they were seeing. And a lot of the things that I was displaying were like, you know, exactly how I should react to, you know, taking care of 5 kids before I go to school or something. But in college, I think because I wasn't fitting into this like mainstream idea of like what a college girl's supposed to be experiencing, I was sent to therapy. And as a second year, like I was saying, I began to get into the healing arts. One of my ways of decolonizing was learning about herbalism, learning about plants, being in nature. I joined a gardening club at UCLA, and it was honestly it was one of the most amazing experiences, and it did more for me than any of those talk sessions did, just being touching dirt. And I realized like, oh my goodness, like my ancestors were doing this. And when I'm touching this dirt and when I'm growing these plants and when I'm learning to heal with these plants, using these medicines like tinctures and all these things, I'm connecting with that knowledge. And it's although I don't know the languages or names or stories of my ancestors, it almost felt like I was reclaiming that. And just listening to the song of the earth was telling me my ancestors' stories, was telling me my story and reminding me how to love and healing all of these like broken parts of myself, and just teaching me like secure attachment, safety. And that was all through gardening and herbalism. So, you know, that transformed into doing yoga and doing birth work, which I would love to talk about more. I just think like all these practices, all these quote unquote alternative forms of healing are not alternative for me in my body. Instead, I'm like activating that DNA code those millennia of practices and rituals and ceremonies that my ancestors were doing. And it really became apparent to me as a fourth year, I went to, well, I began to embark on this spiritual journey. I started eating plant-based because I heard on the podcast, love podcasts. I heard on the podcast that if we want to heal our bodies on a cellular level, we have to eat ancestral foods. And that's when I started learning as someone who is mostly, you know, African blood and Native American indigenous blood that I shouldn't be eating dairy and I shouldn't be eating as much meat as I do. And in learning that and eating food like acai and spirulina and chia seeds and, you know, all the things they're calling quote unquote superfoods now that are really my ancestral foods, I was able to get to this level of just wanting more nature, wanting more healing, wanting more love. And that led me to look into indigenous medicines, which is where I discovered ayahuasca. And it is an indigenous medicine used throughout many contexts. It was used by my ancestors in West Africa. It's still used there. But in today's world, you'll mostly see it used in South America. And I actually was doing a yoga retreat in South America. I was doing a yin yoga teacher training, which was teaching me all about like undoing trauma in the body. So it's like, how do I undo that social trauma? And how do I undo all this trauma I experienced in college? And it just so happened that there were these shamans there, and I had my, I think they were coffee leaves red, and they told me that, you know, I was there in Peru to just go on this journey, and I already knew that, and I was feeling really high vibrational. I had been like maybe eating plant-based for 3 or 4 months just to cleanse myself, and I did the yoga retreat for the week. So I had no social media during that time. I was up in the mountains of Peru. And then the week after that, I went on this healing journey with an Andean shaman using ayahuasca. And, you know, for my peoples, again, that's like an indigenous medicine. But in the United States of America, it's like a controlled substance. And, you know, Black and brown people, inner city people, poor people like myself, we have a deep fear of getting involved with any type of substance that's a controlled substance, because there's a history of the quote unquote war on drugs, which was really just a war on Black and brown bodies, and a criminalization of addiction, and a criminalization of us seeking that healing, us seeking that joy. So of course I had a lot of apprehension about using, working with indigenous medicines, but in my ayahuasca journey, for instance, which was a huge part of decolonizing my wellness, I went on a 3 to 4 day process of working with the medicine, connecting with nature, unpacking and integrating with the facilitator and the shaman that I was with. And I swear it felt like I had done 50 years of therapy each night. And, you know, mind me, I'm 22 years old. I don't even know what 50 years feels like. So that just shows how much colonial and racism and nastiness was in my body that I felt 50 years of healing being done each night. And I felt the wellness that my mom was seeking was like, all of those blockages were in my body. And I felt the things that my people were wanting in my body. I was able to communicate with my ancestors, although I don't know their languages, I don't know their names. And that was a very healing experience for me. And it really took away my stigma around a lot of alternative like medicines. And it made me realize that, you know, they are our ancestral medicine. And for me, physically using the medicine, although I had been plant-based for 4 months, which is what they recommend, just reconnecting to your indigenous foods and practices, I still purged, which looked like throwing up and having diarrhea, mind me. Sorry if anyone's eating. But that was my first night of working with ayahuasca. I was just purging. And as I was purging, I felt every processed, nasty, colonial food I had ever put in my body coming out of me. But not only the foods, the feelings of danger and fear. I felt that coming out of me. And in my body, after that came out of me, I felt space for realization, space for healing, space for love. There was a moment where I had taken a shower with a lot of flowers that I had picked from the mountains in Peru. And instead of feeling like all of the nastiness and aches and pains that I usually feel in my body, even though I'm only 22, I just felt like the flowers were holding me, and I smelt like I smelt the flowers, and I was really in tune with nature in that way. And I think it showed me, oh my goodness, when you release and you let go of those things that were never really yours to begin with. And for me, that looked like the racism, the sexism, and just all the violence that happens to Black women and Indigenous women for so many generations. It makes space for the joy, pleasure, hopes, and dreams. And that experience completely changed my idea of what does healing look like. And I think that there's a space, you know, I still went to my therapist after that and I told her about the experience, and she was like, oh my goodness, like, here this crazy girl goes. But, you know, for me, it wasn't anything recreational at all. It was really my spiritual awakening. And, you know, spirit is such a abstract word, but I think it was my love opening experience, if you will.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm David Gudiel.
And I'm Aliyah Shade.
And Elizabeth has opened this space for the month for us to share our perspective and personal stories as they relate to BIPOC and LGBTQ mental health and well-being. Today we're talking about decolonizing wellness, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. A little bit about, I think, my journey with decolonizing my wellness was really with my physical body image and the way that colonialism really affected me in that sense. And I say that because, you know, in the patriarchy, you know, man is tough, man is strong. And this huge thing that men need to be the protective ones. And there's this certain look, you know, you look at, you know, Leonardo's like art piece of what the body's supposed to look like. You look at the way healthcare looks at BMI, the body mass index, and who that relates to specifically and who gets to be called obese and things like that. So for me, I always felt like I was fat, like I was bigger, and that was rooted in fat phobia, which is a product of colonization. And when I tell you, I love summer, I love getting beautifully brown, but I would not take off my shirt to go to the beach. I would not take off my shirt to go to the pool. And I was like 20 at this point, and there was this weird thing where I just couldn't. I felt like everyone was staring at me. I felt like I wasn't perfect. And I think one thing that really helped me reconnect was the process of yoga and meditation. And Aliyah has this book that she shared with me. What's it called again?
Opening to the Spirit.
There you go. And that one was really interesting to me because it connected the way that we view our mental health and our body on a physical level, like actually physics and looking at frequencies and Carl Jung and all these different psychologists I've learned in class, and really centering where yoga comes from. And it comes from Africa. It comes from Black people, it comes from India, Black Indians. But you wouldn't know that because what you think yoga is for white people that are in the little Lululemons in a yoga studio. And I used to think that I couldn't do, yoga had to be in a perfect place, perfect Zen, so to speak, mode. But that's not true. And at least for myself as a person of color, I feel like my life has always been very chaotic. And one way that I hope that I coped with myself was to always be busy. Like, as long as I was busy, I would be okay, because I don't have time to think of these traumas. I don't want to process the way this feels in my body. But, you know, one time I took this class with Professor Barrett, and we had to do a goal practicing, and my goal was to practice meditation with myself. And that's what opened me up to this journey of yoga and wellness, because for the first time ever, I challenged myself to sit still. I challenged myself to sit with uncomfortableness. And with the guiding words of Professor Barrett, you know, lean into the uncomfortable, I did. And it just, I realized that I had a lot of hurt and I had a lot of pain that I didn't know where it comes from. But, you know, you think of intergenerational trauma, how our grandparents are displaced, and then our parents have to deal with it. And the way our parents are socialized comes to us. So without us experiencing actual traumas, we do get the inherited psychological aspects. So, you know, meditating started to get me there, and yoga started to become my check-in place. I was balding, I was balding out of the top of my head, and I shaved my head because I was scared of people looking at my head and being like, you know, he's balding. And I started to look at that as my crown chakra and connected to my higher self. And, you know, and that literally calls to colonialism, because we look at Western medicine and we kind of take spirituality out of it. And the thing about it, the thing about the mind that is so beautiful, is that we can create any significance we want to our mind and to the outer world. And anxiety comes from the connection that we have as people to our relationship to the outer world. And the more we build on it, the more meaning we can get from it. So to me, I started saying, if I'm balding, it's because I'm not connected to my higher self. So what do I need to do exactly? And I started doing yoga at night, yoga in the morning, and dancing and crying. And, you know, men are told not to cry, but I love to cry. That's some good feeling right there. And there was just all these different things that I had to combat what a quote unquote man can't do. Like, you think of, when you think of men's health, you think of, you know, fighting, you think of going to the gym. But yoga was that really first time I was asked to slow down and to really check in. And overall, that's what I think really helped me get into this process. Like, now I can take my shirt off and realize my body is my body. And I'm loving to my body and saying my affirmations at the end of my meditations by saying, I am love. I am a product of love. I am loved, like, deeply. I am protected. And just reaffirming myself in these things. And colonialism, again, tells you talking to yourself is quote unquote crazy, but it's these things that we tell ourselves. It's these things that we tell others as well. And colonialism really separates us, but yoga is something that really brought me to myself back again. It taught me to connect with others. It taught me just to connect with the land itself too. Like, when I would sit my bare feet on the ground and think of, like, where am I in this world? Yeah, that was my, you know, process from where I started feeling gender norms, societal expectations, weirdness, fat phobia, and how I pushed past that by looking at yoga, following the source of yoga, going to its roots and realizing that, you know, my ancestors a long time ago and other ancestors together would do these practices for healing, for wellness. And now I have this power in myself to do that. And it doesn't always look in Lululemon's in a studio. It looks out in the parking lot. It looks out in my living room and things like that.
And just for anyone that's curious, the full name of that book is Opening to the Spirit, Contacting the Healing Power of the Chakras and Honoring African Spirituality by Caroline Shola Arariwa. And it was honestly a life-changing book for me as well. And I'm so curious about what you're saying, because, you know, we started off this conversation talking about what our engagement means and how our love for each other is our love for a community, and that's how marriage will look for us as well. And then we moved into decolonizing our wellness and what that looked for ourselves, and then also reclaiming our bodies. And I just think it's so ironic that you talk about how transformative yoga was for you, and, you know, our relationship started as it is now, like, as romantic partners after I finished my yoga training.
Sharing
and,
that.
And taught, or, like, just shared my practice with David on the top of Terrace Hill in San Luis Obispo. And, like, that was really the initiation of our romantic relationship together. We had been friends for 6 to 7 years before that, but it was through that yoga practice, that healing practice of stillness and inquiry and connecting, that we started our romantic relationship. And I think that that's beautifully following us into our engagement, and hopefully, you know, we can continue decolonizing our wellness and different forms, and just, like, going outside of this, like, institution of Western medicine, which, you know, for someone like in my body, a Black woman, like, we're just so, we have disproportionate rates of a murder happening in the Western medical system. And I think that, you know, I want to be a midwife, and I want to be a traditional midwife. And that means that in our marriage, like, I'm going to be gone for 3 days at a time attending two births. And that means that as a couple, we're going to have to center our lives and our families' lives around birth and that process and all parts of it. So that means, you know, that prenatal portion, the actual labor and delivery, and then the postnatal portion as well. And being there for people, showing up for people. I think just like thinking about decolonizing our wellness and our health, a lot of our healing is going to happen outside of these institutions of like talk therapy or
in community,
being medicated or being in a hospital bed. I mean, unless we're dealing with something that really can only be treated with Western medical, like that whole complex, then we're going to try to turn back to our ancestors and ask the earth for its wisdom and guidance and healing. I think it has so much to offer. And I also think that a lot of the disease that we feel coming up in our bodies, it starts on the emotional and mental plane long before it shows up in our bodies. And I think what David was saying about like losing his hair and like his connection to his higher self and to spirit, like all of those things are just so deeply connected. So, you know, as we see things surfacing in our bodies and our relationship and society, we're going to just always try to get to the root of it. And if you look at a lot of things in our culture in the United States, you will see that the root of so many things is in racism.
In capitalism.
And, you know, even capitalism is rooted in racism.
Yeah.
And seeing Black people as, you know, a resource to be exploited. Like, our very country was founded on that. So everything that was built in this country is also probably founded in that. And I think a lot of our relationship as we're moving forward is going to be getting to the root of things and realizing, oh, wow, that's rooted in some really oppressive thing that doesn't help us to cultivate joy or play or fun. Instead, we need to go back and we need to listen to the songs of our ancestors and try to figure out what it is that we need to truly be well.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, when we look at Western medicine, we have to remember that Western medicine is just one approach to a problem, one approach to looking at something. And the world has solved problems of medicine long before, you know, to that, like before this country was founded. And there have been always healers in every social, in every community, in every culture, in every society. So it's really looking at thinking, you know, will this get me there? And one of my favorite things Professor Gray would always say is there are many roads to Rome, and Western medicine is just one road to Rome. It's not. And the thing is, I wouldn't even say it's a road. It's like probably a mountain, and you have to go through like a really shaky bridge, and you have to have a lot of money, because we know that the Western medicine complex is really rooted in making money, and it's not really rooted in healing. But yeah, like Western medicine ignores indigenous wisdom all the time because it only views objectivism. And, you know, All About Love by Bell Hooks, she talks about objectivism can only be good for some things, but not all the time, because at the end of the day, we are social, emotional creatures on this world, and we have to address that because much of our power comes from imagination, from pleasure. And that's really what guides us when we go through things. We want to feel good, but the brain likes to react out of fear. And once we are controlled by fear, you know, we get more sick, we get more diseased, but...
And we die.
And we die.
We're murdered. And I think, you know, just before we wrap up, I'll definitely like to introduce this book, Killing the Black Body by Dorothy Roberts. It's really like the root of a lot of the reproductive justice work I do and like why I want to be a midwife. Like Black women have been medicine's biggest test subject for all of United States history. And I really want to talk about the political aspect of birth work. And I want to talk about the love and the hope and the new future, the new pleasurable, more just future. That's really just a return to our pleasure filled and joyful path that is possible through birth work and the work that a lot of doulas and midwives are doing in Black and Brown and Indigenous communities.
Yeah. So for, you know, wrapping up our last couple minutes, you've been listening to A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm David Gudiel.
And I'm Aliyah Shade.
And we've taken over the mic from Elizabeth for BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month. You can share your thoughts by sending us an email or follow us on Instagram. For me, it's D GUDIEL18, DGUDIEL18 on Instagram.
And I can be emailed at AALIYAHSADE at UCLA.edu, AliyahShade at UCLA.edu, or through Instagram at THEAALIYAHSADE at the AliyahShade.
You can also contact Elizabeth through her Facebook page or Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can listen to this and previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Today we talked about why we followed up from last week on why we chose to get engaged in the middle of a pandemic, and we went into decolonizing wellness. We'll be back again next week to share our perspectives, experiences, and hopes for our lives, following for the BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month. Thank you for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
That all men and women are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.